The Healthy Insights podcast features conversations with the leading minds in the field of health and well-being. Our hope is for you to gain insights, learn something new, and discover some valuable takeaways from our fascinating group of guests. Host Jim Narum is a respected leader with over 30 years of experience in the employee health and well-being field. The Healthy Insights podcast is brought to you by Asset Health, a comprehensive health and well-being services and technology provider. Asset Health's approach is based on actively cultivating the idea that your health is your most valuable asset.
This episode's guest is Jen Arnold, founder of Redesigning Wellness. The first 17 years of Jen's career was spent in public health and as a wellness coordinator for a small hospital and later for a large hospital in the Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina area. Jen also worked for a large regional health insurer in North Carolina focused on employer-based wellness. In 2016, Jen founded her own company, Redesigning Wellness, and has also been the host of the Redesigning Wellness podcast, one of the longest-running weekly podcasts in the well-being field. Last April, in 2020, Jen and her family sold their home in North Carolina, bought an RV, and took working remotely to a whole new level. She continues to run her well-being business from the road, homeschooling their kids, while her husband runs their YouTube channel that captures their adventures. Our conversation was recorded remotely with Jen in her RV during a stop in Austin, Texas. Jen Arnold received her bachelor's degree from Auburn University in nutrition and food science and her master's degree in food and nutrition from Southern Illinois University. Jen is also a registered dietitian and also earned a certification in the foundations of Neuro Leadership from the Neuro Leadership Institute. Welcome, Jen. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time. You've got a great story to share.
Thanks, Jim, for having me. I really appreciate, appreciate it.
So last April in 2020, you and your family sold your home in North Carolina, bought an RV, and started traveling the country while continuing to run your company. Don't respond to that. I'm coming back to this.
All right.
So first, your first 17 years in your career, you worked in public health, you were a wellness coordinator at a small hospital, then a larger hospital in North Carolina, and then a larger regional health insurer in North Carolina focused on employer-based wellness. Tell a little bit about your early career.
You want to go way back.
I could go further back for me, but we're not doing that.
Well, I mean, even when I was in college, I had jobs at the wellness centers. So when I was at Auburn University, I worked at the wellness center, which was basically, one guy kind of doing it on the side of his desk and getting eager, students like me to help him, presenting to other college students. And then also when I was in graduate school, my assistantship was at the Wellness Center at the University of Southern Illinois. So I've had that. And then when I got out of school, I said, wow, I can live anywhere. Let me look at big cities like Seattle and Boston. And, they were asking you to have a job in, at that point, a dietitian, some kind of dietetics job, and pay you $30,000 and then required you to live in Boston. So this isn't working. This is not going to happen for me. And so I got a job, ended up in Durham, North Carolina, in public health. And that, because even when I was in dietetics, I was not that person who wanted to do clinical and work in a hospital or food service. So I was already kind of like, I don't know about this. Worked in public health for a couple years, and I was mainly teaching community members. And when I look back on that, it's kind of preposterous. I was teaching low-income communities, me, this young, white, college-educated female, talking to, mothers who I knew nothing about. I knew nothing about motherhood at that point. And budgeting, that kind of stuff. So, but it was a great experience. And then I'm not going to belabor this. I'm trying to make this short and sweet, Jim, because God knows you're not asking for my life story. And then ended up where I fell into a role at a hospital that was in Durham. And it was a joint role between a cardiac and pulmonary dietitian and a worksite wellness person, which is so appropriate. And that's still what happens to this day. Again, can half a person go tackle the whole hospital, which was still, you know, 1,200 employees. And so over the years, I've just worked either directly with employees to enhance their well-being, the community back in the day. And then I ended up, when I was at Blue Cross of North Carolina, working more with employers. So either myself or my team would be the ones advising them on well-being.
So 2016 comes along and you started your own company, Redesigning Wellness. What led to your decision to start your own company? Was it that you've always wanted to be an entrepreneur? Wanted that lifestyle, thought it would be easy. What led you down that path? And it probably wasn't anything I just said.
Well, you know, I have never, ever thought of myself as an entrepreneur. I've always thought of myself as the corporate person who would climb the ladder. I'm very growth oriented. I'm very goal oriented. And actually, when I decided to leave my job at Blue Cross, I was crying. I was like tears telling my team that I'm leaving. Like, I was not like, woohoo, can't wait to leave. I was feeling stifled in my growth. And I say this a lot to other wellness professionals. You can only get so far working directly with employees as a wellness coordinator, program manager, or managing just wellness. And it's unfortunate, but it's the truth. So my career growth, they said, hey, Jen, you can go to marketing and grow, or you can go to operations and grow. And that's how companies work, right? You go within departments to learn more about the business. Makes complete sense. But at that time, I was just like, I just don't want to do that. None of that sounds exciting. And then I looked at my options and I said, I don't find any option that excites me. So I just left on a whim and said, I'm going to do this on my own. And there you go. I left. I had no clue what I was doing. Yeah, no clients, no big plan. And I left just knowing that I would figure it out.
Thanks, Jen, for sharing your story on how your Redesigning Wellness company came to be. Since you founded your company, one of the things you've been doing is hosting a weekly podcast called Redesigning Wellness. 5 years later, it's one of the longest running well-being podcasts with 233 episodes. What did you learn during your podcast hosting, other than hosting a weekly podcast is really a lot of work? You've met and talked to so many guests and covered such a broad range of topics. Talk about your podcast.
Yeah, it is a labor of love. Jim, as you're so smart doing seasons, I thought about that, but I just went fully into it. I started just out of curiosity and wanting to understand why everyone's so fixated on the traditional wellness, you know, kind of why do we do the things we do? And, you know, that was when Al Lewis was really speaking his mind and John Robison was speaking his mind and, you know, Wellness Underground was starting. So I was starting to just, you know, even when I was at Blue Cross, hear some of that and kind of start going, okay, what's going on here? And so I was just like, I just want to understand from people who know a lot more than I do on why do we do the things we do and what is the alternative, more importantly, because you don't want to just say, don't do this, but then you have no other solution. And that's when it started. And it is over 5 years, I've learned so much. I'm taking a pause now. I just need a break. And for many reasons, because I am learning so much. And sometimes when you do weekly episodes, you don't even have time to process what you just learned or put it in action and you're on to the next learning. And so I just needed that for myself. And so when I started with the question of why are we doing things very traditional? Why aren't we, you know, thinking outside the box? And then where I am today, is just I've evolved in such a way that I kind of... It's not that I don't have more questions, and it's not that I don't have need more information, but I've just, it's hard to say what are the top things I learned, although I will tell you one thing. It's just I went from thinking of wellness as a thing you do with employees to it's more than that. It can't be put into a box, and it's really impacts so many parts of the employee experience that the question I was asking at the beginning, I guess, why are we doing things we're doing? it's kind of clear to me we're doing it because organizations are big giant monsters and business is their main priority and for many reasons, right? And that is still a fact. That still happens today, even though we have evolved a little bit, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But it's so much more than just wellness. And I feel that people want to put wellness in that box to where if you do wellness, it's diet and exercise, it's just the physical. And even though we've come some way of it, organizations still see it as the wellness person. They're going to go run that exercise program. There's two things that I learned that I have just shifted my position on. One is just the impact of leadership. Like leadership makes such a difference in an employee's well-being. And if someone has a poor leader, it greatly impacts their well-being. So there's the leadership conundrum, I say, because no matter where you go, no matter how many leadership trainings, there's going to be poor leaders. And it's not because they want to be poor leaders. It's just that they're going to have a lot of other stuff to do. And maybe they don't have the skills to do that. So leadership's been one, just to say, if we don't really just think about the leaders, taking care of the leaders too, then wellness is going to be much harder. But secondly, on the physical realm. So I have admitted to some of the things that I've done in the past as a really well-intentioned wellness person, a dietitian by training, who's been trained to focus on weight and getting people to lose weight. But over the course of talking to many different perspectives, many different people, the health at every size approach is one thing that I've adopted. It's a philosophy I've adopted, which means that it doesn't matter your size, you can still be healthy. Joyful movement instead of, you know, working out at all cost. I really try to advocate for that in organizations and with wellness professionals, because so often we are expected to get people to lose weight or focus on obesity. And I don't care where you are, anywhere you are, they talk about obesity. And it's just, that is one of the things that I can't even compare what I was thinking before the podcast or right when the podcast started to now, because it's just so different.
I think the field is evolving over the past number of years to more of a total well-being approach, mental, emotional, financial, social, physical, and a number of other components. What are your thoughts on this? Are you seeing the same thing?
So yeah, I agree in a sense. So yes and no. So Jim, I completely agree that our field has evolved in the way that we're calling it well-being, but we're definitely focusing on other things, right? So financial wellness is what you said, emotional, mental health. I think that has been, it was happening before COVID, and I think COVID's just kind of made it go into the forefront.
Yeah, agree.
But I still feel like there's that programmatic aspect, you know, kind of you do this for wellness. This is what you're going to do. You're going to run a challenge. You're going to run a program. It's still so activity-based. And I think what the missing piece is, at least for me, and kind of where I've come to the conclusion is that, you know, wellness doesn't need to be a program at all. There are a place for programs. Like, so I don't want to say you should never do one, but if that's all it is, then it's not going to be very helpful. But I've come to a place where I have thought of this role called a well-being integrator, that it's not necessarily creating new stuff, but it's rather someone who can be strategic and collaborative across the organization to say, what exists in our organization today? And how do we just look through it through the lens of well-being? Like, you don't have to own everything, but you do need to say, okay, leadership team, what are we teaching them? You know, are we teaching leaders how to be empathetic and, you know, resilient in this? That's well-being, right? Are we giving them these skills? Yeah. Diversity and inclusion, you know, how can we partner to make sure that our efforts, you know, as we are trying to enhance employees' well-being, are being inclusive? Like, how are we just working together? So I think a lot of it is, let's not make wellness an extra. Let's just make it part of how we already do business. And that's much easier because people have things existing. So why not just plant well-being into those things?
Shifting gears, let's get back to talking about the RV. You're taking remote working to a whole new level.
I'm not the only one, Jim. I've met people on the road too. That's because
I know. I bet you have. I bet you have. Where are you physically located right now? I know you started on this journey. You had a little unexpected pause along the way. Let's talk about remote working for Jen Arnold.
Yeah. So I got to start with our story. We're in Austin, Texas right now. So we've been back on the road. So Jim, you know that we have had some rig service repairs for 3 months. So we got a little delayed. But we started, I'm trying to think back, 2019. My husband's always wanted to go to California. We lived in Raleigh, North Carolina for 18 years of our life. You know, got my first job in Durham. We ended up meeting there and staying there. And he wanted to move, took me some convincing. And I was like, okay, let's do this. And, you know, it's always been in my bucket list to take a cross-country trip. So let's just take our minivan, which I loved my minivan, by the way, across country. And let's just take a couple weeks. And then for some reason, we found ourselves at an RV show. And I think it's because we were like, we'll get to California. We'll buy an RV when we get to California and we'll go explore California. And then it was me. I had a moment there and I said, and I was not drinking. So let me just say that. I was totally stone cold sober. And I said, what if we got an RV and we got it ahead of time and we just traveled for 6 months? And my husband's like, we'll figure out the kid stuff of two small kids.
So all of this conversation and your thought process, this is pre-COVID. This is before pre-COVID. That was really even on the horizon.
Pre-COVID. I mean, yes. I mean, the plan was my friend laughed at me because I had so many work clothes on the rig. She's like, where the hell are you going to wear these high heels? I was like, look, I got keynotes. I got trainings. Like, we had a whole plan. Like, we were going to, you know, stay somewhere and I was going to travel out, come back. That was the plan. And then COVID hit. As it did. And, you know, we were going to buy the rig and it was right when things were starting to, it was February-ish. And we were about going to go sign the papers. And I said to my husband, I was like, I don't feel good about this. Let's not do it. Like, I can't. Like, there's just gut feeling. Let's not do it. So we ended up our house was already sold. So, you know, we were moving regardless. and so we knew we were moving. And then we went to Alabama to quarantine with my dad. And then I'm trying to make this short, Jim. Summer hit, and I was like,
"Oh, I love the story. We can't. Some things you just can't shortcut."
Then in summer, I realized COVID's not going anywhere. Like, we are going to be in it. And I said, "You know, we're self-contained. You can stay pretty much by yourself. So we have bathrooms, showers, and everything." I said, "Let's go get the rig." So we went back up to Raleigh, purchased the rig in May of 2020. And left in July. And so we've been on the road from July. We went July to December, had the little service, and we've been back on the road since March. And we continue. I mean, our plan is to continue, depends on the day, if we're going to stop this summer, but I'm hoping to keep doing it until the summer of 2022.
Wow, that's awesome. And all the while, you're continuing to run your Redesigning Wellness company. My understanding is that your company is now focused on a few different services, providing resilience training through live and virtual trainings. You've got a 4-week resilience learning lab, and you also have some self-paced on-demand online trainings. Talk about the services your company is offering now.
Yeah. So I was doing resilience trainings before COVID, and it was just pretty steady business. And then, you know, everyone's talking about resilience now, because God knows we all have been through the ringer. So yeah, the majority of what I do now is resilience training. So I will do them virtually. And so, yeah, I get on with employers, and usually it's customized, a 4-week series or a 90-minute session. It just depends on what the employer wants. And so we talk about things that are really pressing for people, the feeling of overwhelm. You know, how do they deal with it from an emotional and mental perspective is usually what I tackle with them. And so, yeah, I do them virtually. I have it online as well so they can do a safe, self-paced course. And I started a new mastermind to where people watch it ahead of time and then we get together and talk about it, which is really where I think some of the growth can happen once you have time to digest it and then get together and go, okay, how does this fit into our life and how does that work and what doesn't work? So yeah, resilience is really the main thing I'm focused on. And the beautiful thing about that is my schedule is, you know, in the I just did a training yesterday. Kick the family out of the rig. So do my training and then I can be done. And then I just work throughout the day. But, you know, like today we're going to go out, check out downtown Austin. So my work can be integrated into my life and my travels pretty well. I'll pause there. There's one more thing I want to talk about, but any questions?
Well, resilience training is absolutely needed. I like the fact that you've been doing resilience training for years, but COVID really brought out the need for resilience training even more.
Yeah. And I've been reading just how the American Psychological Association is talking about the second wave of the pandemic is going to be mental health issues. And what I'm finding from employers is that, you know, we've been had our foot on the gas for now 14 months. Like when you think about going back to the pandemic, not for wellness people as much because we had a brief pause, not everyone, but some of us are like, oh, what's going on? But in a business, it was crisis management for the past year and they've been working as crisis management and now people are like freaking exhausted, but yet the business
crisis management too.
It is. It's coming and people are struggling mentally. And even though the vaccine gives us a lot of hope, what was interesting in the stats that I was reading from the APA was that the same amount of people vaccinated versus not vaccinated are still worried about going out and about into normal life. And so there's still anxiety and now it's just a bunch of burnout with it. So we need it, but we need it not just from training. Yeah, you need resilience training, but you also need some of those structures to be in place. Like we're still managing kids at home. You know, we're still not taking breaks. We're still, and women are having more trouble than men, although men with kids are having problems as well from anxiety and depression. So it needs more support from organizations. And the one thing that is never going to happen, but I think would benefit us all greatly, is to figure out what we could cut or where we could work less or work smarter and think about just kind of easing up on that gas pedal. Because you know as well as I do, Jim, there's things in business that you don't need to do. You do them because they're there and you've got the time to do them, but they can be cut and there's probably relatively low impact to the business. So I think it's just getting priorities straight, expectations straight would be very helpful.
Yes. People talk about the new normal. I don't really know what this will be going forward, but it will be different. Employees that have gotten a taste of working remotely, maybe not quite to the same extent that you've been doing, but there's a lot of employees that have gotten a taste of working remotely and really like it. And then there are other employees that can't wait to get back to the office when they feel that it's safe to do so. So there's all that dynamic going on.
Yeah, and the dynamic is truly going to be hard for leaders to handle, right? So they've got their own perspective on work from home, and then you're going to have people feeling, and as they all have throughout the pandemic, it's all sorts of ways, right? Some love working from home, some don't. And then your company may be like, I don't care what you want, you're getting back in the office. Although I think more open to it now. So yeah, they're just dealing with a lot of different perspectives, a lot of different opinions and situations. I've even struggled with even when I do some of the keynotes and training, you're like, what is a post-COVID world? Are we going to live in is there ever life without COVID? I mean, it may be like the flu, right? That it was like, and I think we just have this pandemic weariness. And so I can't even say it's a post-COVID world. It's just like you said, we're emerging into, here's the reality. What do we do about it? And how do we function most effectively with it
here? Jen, this has been fabulous. The final thing I ask all my guests, and I want to ask you too, is what are your top three takeaways that you would like our listeners to remember from this episode?
Oh, Jim, you turn the tables on me. I always ask for one tangible tip and people hate the question. And now I understand why they hate the question. You asked me, at least you asked me for three. Okay. One, let me jumble my way through this. One, I guess it's just from a career perspective, since we talked about your career is not always linear. Oftentimes it is big squiggly lines and lateral moves and kind of figuring out what you want to do. But I just say that for people, your career is vital to your well-being. And if you're not happy in your role, really examine it and figure out kind of what's going on. They have talked to several wellness professionals that are super burnout right now and trying to figure out what's going on with their career. So I'd say career's one. Two is the collaboration that's needed across your organization. Don't feel like you always have to be that wellness expert, but go and talk to people and collaborate. And it's much harder in a virtual world, but you can send an invitation. You can have a phone call. It doesn't have to be a face-to-face Zoom meeting. It can just be like, hey, what are you working on? Lots of connections I've seen just through that reach out. Collaboration is really vital. And I think three is just like, I think for wellness professionals and organizations just to realize that people are really struggling right now. There was a pandemic weariness. And even as I was training, I did a training with a group yesterday and she said, this sounds great and all, but it just feels like one more thing. And I said, I get it. Okay. And if you're not in that place, don't do it. Like, just be gentle with people and anything you're trying to do to help them with wellness, don't give them a lot of stuff. Just know that the mental state people are at right now. And, you know, someone listening may be in that same place. So really just take that bar down a notch and figure out how we can all lower our expectations a little bit and still get the job done.
That's awesome. I love the takeaways. This has been so much fun. Thank you so much. Appreciate your insights And I'm envious of your remote traveling in an RV.
It can happen for you too, Jim.
It can happen. Well, I don't know. I have to talk to my wife about it. And maybe that's not going to happen, but I'll live through you.
Well, you know what? I would say that if it isn't the ultimate lifestyle for two adults who like to travel. It has been amazing. And there's a lot of misconceptions about living in an RV. And when people call it a trailer, I have a moment where I'm like, I don't live in a trailer. But RVs can be pretty nice, pretty spacious. I'm just saying.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app or player. We also encourage you to rate this podcast. Thanks for listening. And see you next time.